Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. Today, we're heading back to Kansas City to explore another haunted hotel.
I'm so excited.
Me too. The hotel that we'll be talking about has gone through many name changes, but it's currently being called the 21C Museum Hotel. And I had never heard of them before. Had you?
No, I had not.
The concept is pretty cool from now, you know, after us researching, but it looks like there's several throughout the United States, and they are museums and hotels in one.
I do like that.
I love it. So the concept is pretty cool. It blends an art museum into a hotel, and then each one has a restaurant. And it seems like the art can change too. So, you know, it could be different every time you go.
Tell me why, where my brain immediately goes is museum, hotel, already haunted hotel, haunted art, like the crying boy painting.
That's what they should do there. Although that leads to a lot of fire, so maybe not.
That's true. Even though every haunted hotel has to set fire at least like 16 times for some reason.
It's true. So let's talk about the early days of this hotel and then see why it's so spooky. There are a lot of articles in dedicated history pages for the early years, but there's also sort of a gap in some of the history. So we've tried to piece together what we could. Originally, it was called Hotel Thorne, and its builder was Joshua Thorne. And the idea of the hotel began in 1888. The build started in 1889, and then it finished in 1890. Although some sources do say it opened in 1888, so it's really hard to figure that part out. The initial rate was only $1 per day, and an amenity that was very uncommon at the time is that it had free baths.
Who doesn't love a free bath?
People were flocking for these baths. As we were researching this super old hotel, right? Throughout history, there's also several articles that have been saved, which we thought was interesting in itself. Some, and we're going to talk about it as we go through it, some are very, very hard to read. So some are very faded or a little messed up. So we did our best to go through them and get any information we could about the hotel.
That makes sense. One of them that we saw was about a clairvoyant, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah, that operated out of the Hotel Thorne.
Yeah, just the idea of anyone running a business out of a hotel and putting an ad in the paper, I find very fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
So the hotel was sold in July of 1892, just 2 years after it opened, and it was sold for $200,000, which, what a steal.
Yeah.
So then, in March of 1893, it was sold again for that same price. Later in 1893... Joshua Thorne passed away and still had a lot of outstanding debt on the property that was owed to the Arbuckle brothers. The Arbuckle brothers were known as the Coffee Kings.
I love them.
And they took possession of the building through a foreclosure. During all of this, the Hotel Thorne was closed. Some sources also show that the Arbuckle brothers had ownership from the beginning, while others discuss Thorne as being the original owner. I'm just going to say this for foreclosure law wise. If they had a lien on the property that was first in line, then even if they weren't owners, they could foreclose on it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
So the hotel reopened again as the Hotel Savoy in December 6th of 1894. And at that point was leased by Frank P. Ewens. He had big plans to expand. So by the fall of 1897, he had began the expansion. They added a sixth floor. They added new areas like offices, a kitchen, and other places as well. Originally, he also wanted to expand by buying a vacant lot to the west of the building, but the seller of that lot doubled the purchase price when the purchase was almost done. Disrespectful.
Right.
So then the cost for the renovation at that point was expected to be about $30,000. However, it ended up being much more, and Frank didn't have all the money. So there's a few years of unknown history, and it also does seem as though Frank wasn't able to accomplish all of the expansions and renovations that he had wanted to do. Then, around 1900, the hotel was started to get busier and attracted, quote, multiple classes of society.
So Frank was at it again around 1903, and he's like, you know what? I want to expand. I didn't get to finish everything I wanted to, so let's do it again. The Arbuckles were like, no, 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 we don't want to pay for this. But Frank, he's pretty persistent. He tells them his ideas and he's like, I want to buy a 40-foot stretch of land next to the hotel. I want to expand. He also wanted to make a grill that would cater to the upper class. Now, this time, he pretty much got his way. The Savoy Grill opened in 1903, and it's considered Kansas City's oldest restaurant, and it's still going as the Savoy at 21C now. New name.
I just want to point out that 40 feet is not a lot of space. Like, if you're like a 40-foot stretch of land.
I think it's for all levels, though.
I'm just thinking more just like 40 feet generally to one side isn't that much, but yes, when you're multiplying it times six.
Yeah, yeah. At its inception, so the grill, it did not allow women, but that quickly changed. How fucking rude.
Very bizarre.
Right? But then they're like, oh, we kind of need them because they'll give us their money. So during Prohibition, I thought this was really cool, too. Instead of removing the bar, they just like hid it behind some drapes. They're like, they'll never know.
Wow. Criminal masterminds.
Yes. Yes. The sex part, too.
But I mean, the next part is, though, like, I'm like, ugh, yeah, I don't think gross. I would want to drink it, but no, go for you.
But it worked. So also during Prohibition, there were rumors that the grill would have trucks of full frozen chickens delivered. And inside the cavities of the chickens, they were filled with bottles of gin, whiskey, and rum. And then additionally, if you were staying at the hotel and you tipped well, the bellman would sneak some alcohol into your luggage.
Do you think that he snuck it in by shoving a full frozen chicken into your bag? And then you just had just fucking salmonella and fucking just like dealer's choice of alcohol.
I hope so.
You don't even get to choose if it's gin, whiskey, or rum. You just have a frozen chicken that is slowly thawing and leaking chicken juices onto all of your clothing, but all in the sake of just a nice drink.
And you couldn't wash your clothes as well back then either. Yeah. Like, you didn't have laundry detergent, so it would just be salmonella clothing.
Mm, delicious.
Gross. Oh, that makes my stomach turn. But I thought that was interesting. Just, I know, kind of off topic, but during Prohibition, all the things that they do to keep their alcohol there. Also during this time, just something funny that we found as we were going through all of these articles is we found this particular article about the hotel, but it was pointless. I don't know. Like, what is the point in this article? Who could know?
It was definitely a slow news day when this was written and published.
Right. I was telling Lindsay before we started recording that, like, if this is what a newspaper had today, I would for sure be reading the newspaper all the time. And so what the article said was,
a traveling man, very slightly under the influence of liquor, walked up to the telephone desk at the Savoy Hotel today and asked for a number. The girl called it for him and then said, step over to the booths, please. The what? Asked the man. The booths, regarded the girl. Well, I declare, gargled the traveling man. That's just where I came from. But all right, you're running things. Then he went back to the bar. He thought she had said booze.
I love that.
I don't know what that accent was. Actually, I do know what that accent was. It is the voice for my brother's dog, Jeej. It is Jeej's voice.
I love that everyone has a voice for their dog.
Yeah, 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 for sure, for sure. But that's Jeej's voice. She's an old-timey newspaper writer.
I love it. Thanks, Gigi, for your input today.
Also, I just want you to know that the title of this article is, he went back to the bar. A traveling man mistook the telephone girl's instruction. Okay.
Perfect.
What a little anecdote. So many famous people have also visited the restaurant, including Anthony Bourdain when he was doing an episode of No Reservations. It also has a booth that is known as the, quote, presidential booth because it hosted Warren Harding, Harry Truman, Gerald Ford, and Ronald Reagan. It's also said that John D. Rockefeller was said to enjoy the restaurant. Fancy.
Yeah, it's a pretty fancy restaurant. I mean, I wouldn't eat anything there because I'm so picky. I eat what, like, a four-year-old would eat, but, like, it looks nice.
Well, here's the thing. You like chicken. They've got a ton of fucking chicken. So it has to be all chicken dishes. I don't want to know what the menu is now, Amanda. I'm assuming that all they had was fucking chicken. No vegetables, nothing. Just different preparations of chicken. Because otherwise, hopefully somebody would have been like, man, they get an awful lot of fucking chickens.
And they taste a little like gin for some reason.
This is a... This chicken is oak barrel aged.
Oh, gosh.
And this chicken is suitcase aged. Anyway, let's get back to Frank's expansions, because that is what this episode is apparently about. It's just what Frank wanted to do to this hotel. He had big fucking plans. He wanted to add a 7th floor, a restaurant, and an additional 100 rooms. It doesn't seem like the entire 7th floor ended up happening, but there was like a kind of addition-ish, if you will, to a 7th floor. And eventually the Arbuckles gave in, because I'm assuming that Frank is very charming and very convincing. He's like, let me tell you just like my dreams for the Hotel Savoy. And they're like, go on. And he's like, honestly, just build more. Build more. Whatever it is, I want more.
Right.
Oh, and like the 7th floor addition that we're talking about is like only on like a third of the building, it looks like. It's pretty tiny. So it looks kind of like a rooftop penthouse almost, is kind of the vibe that I get.
Yeah.
But moving on. According to the National Register of Historic Places nomination form, there are many additional ownership changes over the years. And if you've never seen one of these forms, they are often incredibly long.
Very detailed.
Like so long. When we were doing our research for last week's episode on Abel Clemens, one of the things that I was looking at was a historic place in Clarksburg to see if I could find like an old map. And they're just very, very long. But anyway, the hotel also had additional names throughout its history, including the Milner Hotel and the Earl Hotel. In the early 2010s, several floors have been converted to long-term residential apartments. Is that funny in and of itself? No. But if you knew how many times it took me to say 2010s rather than the 1910s, you'd understand. Anywho, the maintenance on these residential apartments, though, wasn't really kept up well. And there were parts that were boarded up. There ended up being open elevator shafts or graffiti on the walls and debris, as well as trash in corners. Also, many of the windows on the 6th floor were broken. We also saw an article from January of 2012 that the hotel was a bed and breakfast. So interesting that it's like it became like a residential space, but wasn't maintained well. It's also bizarre, though, right? Because like you're like, this is a hotel down here, but upstairs, who could say that's been abandoned?
Right? There's so much going on inside this one building.
Yes, there's a lot happening. So we also saw an article from January of 2012 that the hotel was a bed and breakfast. It seems like some of the rooms were for the bed and breakfast and others kept being long-term apartments. However, the leftover rooms were padlocked and closed because they weren't being used.
So weird. I couldn't imagine staying in a place like that where it's just nonsense everywhere.
So I will say, I stayed at a hotel recently that was the size of a city block.
I thought you were going to say how many 12-year-old boys.
I don't know off the top of my head. I'll try to do the math at a later point in time because it would take too long now. But of this massive hotel, only like 30 of the rooms were being used because the others were just like holding other stuff. And I found it very unnerving to know that there was like so much unused space that could be used, if that makes sense. It was just very strange.
That's how I feel about my house half the time.
I mean,
I'm storing my craft stuff. And I'm like, this could be a room if I didn't hoard craft things. So let's get back to this hotel. On October 23rd of 2014, a fire destroyed the kitchen at the Savoy Grill. Firefighters said it was due to inattentive cooking.
As a person with ADHD, I take personal offense at that.
Please don't burn down your house.
I would like to not do that. Yes.
So like you said at the beginning of this episode, though, every haunted hotel has a fire, right?
It must. It unlocks the ghosts.
It does. So no customers were in the restaurant at the time, and the residents of the building were evacuated. Luckily, the fire was like contained inside the basement kitchen and it didn't really spread. However, there was a lot of smoke damage because that travels a little bit more. The hotel closed in 2014 and then reopened a few years later as the 21C Hotel Kansas City. And that's what we know it as today. It seems like before the fire, they were already in negotiations. And I did see a few people were worried that they may not want it after the fire, but they still did.
That makes sense.
They had proposed a $47.5 million investment to renovate the building. And just another kind of fun fact about this building, it is the oldest continuously operating hotel in the United States west of the Mississippi River.
Such a specific fact.
Yeah. So now let's talk about why we're all here, right? We want to know about the hauntings inside this building. Room 505 is said to be the most haunted. One man named Larry reported that the water wouldn't stop turning on in the bathroom, even though he kept turning it off. And it was at the time that it was an apartment, so it wasn't like a rented room for the night. It was the long-term rental. He had gotten out of the shower and he was brushing his teeth, and the water in the shower just turned on by itself. He turned it off, and it happened 3 more times. And then the shower curtain may have been open too at the time. It was like turning on and off, so very strange. By the 4th time, he was like, fuck this, and he went to go get the manager. Another instance is when a manager named Sean Burns was walking past the room and he heard jazz music. And he assumed Larry was just in his room listening to music. But then when he got down to the lobby, Larry was there. Now, Larry lived alone, so he's like, what's going on in your apartment? He told Larry about the music. And then when Larry went to go investigate, it was coming from a radio that was sitting on his washing machine. The radio was normally on like a rock and roll station, but it had been changed to an entirely different station. And somehow it turned on while he was gone. He wasn't in the apartment. The weirdest part, though, is that he lived alone and he was the only one with the key to the apartment. So no one knows how that radio got turned on. Now that the room is part of the hotel again, people have stayed in the room and they've reported hearing music when nothing's turned on. So this spirit just really likes music, jazz music.
I love that Larry was like, I'm not listening to jazz.
I only listen to rock and roll.
I'm a rock and roll boy. Also, I'm going to give no context, but did you know that one of my nicknames is Larry?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Anywho, there was another strange happening with Larry in his apartment. So inside the apartment, there was a dividing door between the bedroom and the living room, and he would typically keep this closed while he was sleeping. The door would also typically close on its own as well because it was pretty heavy and, you know, gravity. One night around 11:30 p.m., the door opened and he was in bed and had heard the door open. So he went to look to see if there was anyone there, and there was no one in the apartment. There was no sign of a break-in and the front door was still locked. People have investigated the room / apartment. There's even one account where someone saw an apparition of a woman. We also did see that there was a sealed gun hidden in one of the walls, but we couldn't see what year it was found. I do not like that.
No.
It was found during renovation, and it was a turn of the century 32 caliber gun.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. So footsteps have also been heard throughout the hotel and inside room 505. Some have smelled perfume and cigarettes. Several employees have quit due to the hauntings, which, I mean, like, if you get a job and you're not expecting that, then that's fair. Amanda sent me this TikTok about people who work in cranberry bogs and that when they get interviewed, they have to say whether they're afraid of spiders. And like, that's because there's wolf spiders that are like fucking massive that when you flood the bogs to get the cranberries, the spiders will crawl up the people to escape. And it's like hundreds of spiders they will encounter. So I feel like in the same way that that interview process is like, are you afraid of spiders? If you're going to work at this hotel, they should be like, oh, hey, do you believe in ghosts? Yes, no. Are you okay with there being ghosts present? Yes, no. Because otherwise, you're just going to have to keep training people once they inevitably encounter the ghost.
Right, and like put them to a test. Like, they have to stay in room 505 for a night. And
oh, they can a haunted stay. Test.
Well, they were saying with that same article, right? Or the video I sent you, that like the first time they encounter a spider, a lot of them are like freaked out. And they're like, you can't do it during the flooding season because you will freak out.
Yeah. Well, I would just say that rather than testing them once they're hired during the interview, I would have some like fake spiritual activity happening in the room before I walk in to see how they're handling it.
You and I are like writing notes like, how can we talk about this?
Hiring practices for haunted hotels. A guide.
Yeah. Yeah. If you give us a call, if you need to have us interview those people.
Oh, we'd love to. So, some people have taken photos of the hotel and have seen apparitions in their photos that they didn't see while they were there. Also, throughout the hotel, faucets and showers sometimes turn on by themselves. This ghost is like, fuck your water bill and fuck the environment. We are going to use all this water.
It's because of the free baths.
Oh, yeah. They're like, free baths, free waters, let's go.
Yeah.
Free waters, by the way. Some visitors have also claimed that they have seen items levitating in the air.
I don't like that.
Mm-mm. Especially if it's breakable.
Mm-hmm.
This like, it's like, one. Oh, I've got your glasses. What if these were just to fall? I'm just assuming that the ghosts are a jerk, you know? Like, oh, you have this glass of water. Get fucked. Because it doesn't like water.
They're cats?
They are, yeah.
So this next one we've talked about in several episodes that we very much dislike. But the elevator seemed to malfunction. And some people blame the ghost of a little girl. But we have a different idea, and we're going to talk about another person later on. The little girl, though, that's seen around the hotel is dressed in Victorian era clothes, you know, as usual. She also likes to chase people. And some people have reported feeling followed in the hallways. And a lot of reports of this little girl come from the fourth floor.
I do love that she's like, if I'm going to be a ghost, I'm going to be a ghost.
Yeah, she's going to have fun with it. Speaking of the elevator, sometimes when people push the button to go to the fourth floor, it'll go to the sixth. Just sounds like bad wiring to me, but
I'd be annoyed.
I would too. Reports of being watched or other odd feelings have been heard from people on the second floor. Many have also captured things like orbs in their videos and their photos. Although I will say personally, I'm normally skeptical of orb videos because a lot of the time, especially in older buildings, it's like dust or people walking, kicking stuff up. But in some of these videos that I watched, there were a few where their movement just couldn't really be explained.
That's fair. I feel like orbs are such an easy thing to get a picture of that it's not impressive to me. Unless, you know, I'm sure there's like things here and there, but I feel like most of the time when someone's like, this is an orb, but I'm like, no, that's a reflection from someone's watch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you really have to look at a lot of things when you say you have an orb picture or a video and see basically what's happening in the room all around you, because a lot of the time, most of the dust will go up one way, but if you see it going up and then like changing directions a lot, then, you know, I can't really explain that. So unlike some of the hotels that we've talked about where we're like, we don't know why it's haunted or why people are seeing these things. In this particular instance, we might have reasons for some of the things that people are seeing. So we're going to go through a lot of the deaths and possible explanations for these hauntings. Like I said at the beginning, there were several newspaper articles about some of the deaths over the years. And for the ones that were a little bit harder to read, we're going to say like some of the information we just tried to decipher through a very old article. And then unfortunately, because of how some of these articles were kept, there's not a lot of dates on them. So we just tried to determine the order by what the hotel was called at that time. So the first one that we found was W.S. Brooks, and he was a young man who leapt to his death from the fourth story at the Hotel Thorn. The newspaper article said, quote, no cause can be assigned for his deed, so it's unknown why he did it. Another man named Fred Leitner was shot on the fourth floor. He was a regular guest and had stayed at the fourth floor apartment. So some said guest, but I believe he actually lived there. Some paranormal investigators even believe that they have EVPs from him, which kind of cool.
Yeah.
Visitors and staff have said that they have seen him. So like they've actually seen the apparition of him. And some even say he looks real until he disappears. They also like to blame him for their rearranged belongings. So like while they're staying in the room, their stuff will just be changed around. So we were able to find a specific story about Fred, and it's from a man named Reed Shaler, and he was actually working as a waiter, and he lived on the third floor while he was working there, and he was visiting his friend Kathy. Kathy worked at the lobby desk, and she lived on the fourth floor, so one floor above him. Now, when he was visiting his friend, a woman named Mrs. Leitner lived across the hall from Kathy. She came over, and she asked to borrow a cup of sugar. Kathy, unfortunately, was out of sugar, but Reed's like, you know, I got it. So he ran to his room to grab her some sugar. When he returned, he went straight to Mrs. Leitner's room. He heard her talking to someone inside, and he had knocked on the door. He waited a second, and then he's like, she's expecting the sugar. He opened the door. As he pushed the door open, he saw a man standing next to Mrs. Leitner. He was wearing a 1930s double-breasted suit, and he looked a little different. He was very gray, and the way he described him was in outline form. But he could see him clearly. He just looked a little different. Then the man disappeared. Kathy was standing next to Reed, so she also saw this happen. Mrs. Leitner casually said, oh, that's my dead husband, Fred.
Oh, that's kind of sweet, though, that like her husband's there with her.
Yeah, yeah. And like they just talk.
Yeah.
But after this run-in with Fred, Reed believes Fred took a liking to him and he would visit his apartment. For about a month after the sugar incident, he would come back to his room and he'd find his cassettes and his records laid out on his bed. But like he had put them away before he left. So it looked like someone was deciding what they wanted to listen to. And he believes it was Fred.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Fred's just like, you got some good music. We're going to hang out.
Like, you're nice to my wife. You got her sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I would have met, look, if I was a ghost and I was present and I was like looking at how people were treating my significant other after my death, I would not be a nice ghost to you if you were mean to my significant other.
Right. He's like, this is what you should listen to at night when you get home.
Yeah.
But at night, his apartment would get extremely cold. And another weird thing is he would lock his closet. And when he'd return back to his apartment in the afternoon, it would be unlocked.
Okay, but why was he locking his closet?
I don't know. Just in case, like, I guess if you're living in something that has a lot of, like, guests, like a hotel at the time, maybe in case, like, cleaning crews or something came in. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they'd do that for the workers, but...
Yeah.
Maybe just, like, don't touch my stuff. But another really weird occurrence is that he would, on Sundays, he would light candles and someone would blow them out. Like, he would light them and then immediately after, they would just get blown out. And I guess we suspect that it was Fred. Fred's just like, no fires in this hotel, no more.
My brother hates the smell of a blown out candle. Like, it really upsets him. Like, he hates the smell. So I just imagine if you were a person who hated the smell of a blown out candle and this ghost's like, fuck you.
He just didn't want fires.
But okay. So we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the deaths that have occurred at the Hotel Savoy. Again, I say it every time at different points in the episode, but Moo is snoring loudly.
As she does.
I am sorry. She exists and will always be a part of True Creeps. So B.V. Hornung was a 60-year-old carpenter, and around 10:30 in the morning on a particular Saturday, he visited the Hotel Savoy. He sat down in a lounging chair that was outside the hotel, and as he did, another guest sat in the chair next to him to smoke their pipe. The guest turned to him to ask for a match, and B.V.'s head dropped backwards. He had actually died in the chair. The coroner, George Thompson, did his autopsy and determined that he had died of heart disease. That's sad.
That is sad, but just so random place to die. You know, you sat outside a hotel for a moment and then you're dead.
Yeah, like you're not even staying there. You're just sitting there for a moment. So next to what we were going to discuss, the death of C.C. Tickner. According to the clipping that we saw, a small-sized, well-dressed man who was smooth-faced and had black hair checked into the Hotel Savoy on a Monday. Just call him what he is, a short king. We learned later that he was only 19 years old. He had said that his name was C.C. Tickner of Topeka, Kansas, at check-in. That afternoon, he went to a photo gallery and paid for a dozen pictures of himself to be delivered on Thursday. After returning to the hotel, he sent a boy to the Coates Opera House to get some tickets for that evening's performance. He ended up going, and he went with George Holtzman, who was the barber for the hotel. And by all accounts, they had a good time together. The next day, he woke up, had breakfast, and went for a walk to the Missouri River, and he crossed at the Hannibal Bridge. And at that point, the river was high. People reported seeing him gazing intently at the waters. So he went back to the hotel after his walk, and he was there for several hours. Just after 1 p.m., he came out and ate lunch, and then he went back out to that bridge that he had went to earlier and bought a ticket to go across. According to a fisherman named George Humes, he watched Tickner looking down at the water for about 5 minutes. Then, Tickner stepped back from the railing, threw off his coat, placed his hands on the railing, and then he paused and then jumped over the rail. His head appeared in the waves about a minute later. He was about 50 feet from where he had originally jumped. The fisherman saw him one more time before he disappeared. So, after he jumps into the river, but just by perhaps a few minutes, a chambermaid at the hotel went into his room, and inside of his room, on the table in the center of the room, she saw a woman's gold watch, a chain, a diamond stud, and two rings, which is kind of weird if he checked in by himself, right?
Yeah.
Then, on top of the jewelry, there was a card that said, "For Mother." The letter was incredibly sad, and it was basically a note saying goodbye to his parents and relatives. It said that he had traversed the pace of life that is fraught with disaster and tasted of life's bitter and its sweet. He is also known to be the black sheep of his family. That really hurts my heart.
Yeah.
So his father, M.J. Tickner, said that his son had been working as a paper hanger steadily for 2 years and that he had a good reputation. He left one early one morning, not saying where he was going, and only had the clothes he was wearing.
So sad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deaths at this hotel, and it's just sad to go through each one because, you know, this is a long time ago, too, for a lot of them. So we only have whatever details the paper had, and there's not a lot about a lot of these people.
Yeah.
So in the late 1800s, a woman named Betsy Ward killed herself in the bathtub of room 505. However, another source said that she died from a heart attack. And then there's a whole other one that said that some suspected foul play. All we know, though, is that she died in that bathtub. And some suspect that she's the reason why the water turns on and off in that particular room.
Interesting.
In 1990, a staff member was stabbed on the second floor. The staff member was the restaurant manager, and he was killed by one of the dishwashers, from what I saw.
That's wild.
Mrs. Etta Mitchell of Topeka, Kansas, took her life inside the Hotel Savoy. She was only 23 years old when she died, and she was found unconscious around 1:30 in the afternoon and was taken to get help, but she later died. She had checked into the hotel the night prior, and she had asked for a wake-up call at 9 a.m. She was staying in room 86 on the fourth floor. And the 86 was kind of hard to see in the paper, but I believe that's what it was. She registered at the hotel under a different name. She actually told them her name was Mrs. E. Marshall, not Mitchell. At 9 a.m., a bellboy knocked on the door, and she seemed fine at the time. At about 1:30 in the afternoon, a chambermaid couldn't get into her room, so she went to go get the housekeeper to unlock it. When they entered, she was unconscious. Near her, there was a bottle that contained morphine. Also, there was an envelope that was addressed to Harry Johnson, room 200, New York Life Building. There was a note that said, quote, "Give this to Mr. Johnson. He will take care of me." The man was called, and what he did was very strange. He actually tore up the note and wouldn't let anyone else read it. So that's when they took her for help. From what I understood reading this article, and again, these were a little hard to decipher, it seemed like they waited for him before they took her anywhere, which I thought was very strange, instead of just like immediate help.
That is very strange.
Later that afternoon, an unnamed woman and a teen identified the woman under her real name, not the one that she had checked in under. Authorities said that the woman resembled Mrs. Mitchell, and in one article, they suspected that it might have been maybe her sister. They also said that she was accompanied from Topeka by a man that was not her husband. They said she was going to talk to the man, who they didn't name, and then they would come back. Another article also said that the pair told authorities that they would come back after seeing, quote, "the man that caused this." But there's no record of them actually coming back.
That's very strange.
It is very strange. What I found interesting, too, is that there was a few articles on this specific woman, and that so many of them included, you know, like details in what could have been a case of some kind, right? Like, they're just like telling the public everything about her death. And I thought that was just very bizarre. Another note about Mrs. Mitchell is that she had made two attempts in Topeka for a divorce. There was a follow-up article, but the way that it was scanned was just very difficult to read parts of it. But from what we could decipher, it sounds like she had packed a decent amount of stuff, which they suspect that she planned on staying in Kansas City for some time. Also, they found a watch with the name Etta engraved on the chain. When they received a telegram from Topeka, it stated that neither a Mrs. Etta Marshall nor Mitchell answering the description of the dead woman was known there. So remember, she said she was from Topeka, but sounds like she might not have been, or just no one was claiming her. Mr. Johnson was asked a number of questions by a reporter, which again, I thought this was bizarre. It wasn't like anyone of authority questioning this man. It was just a reporter writing an article, like,
yeah,
heavily questioning this man. At first, through the questioning, he denied knowing her and having anything to do with her. But then he finally gave in and he said that he had met her about 6 months ago.
I'm just glad somebody was asking questions, though. Even if it was a reporter, somebody was like, "What the fuck is this guy doing?"
I think it was more bizarre to me that how different, you know, like an investigation is. Like before, the reporters would be like, "I'm going to do anything to find this." And now, like, we just have to like wait for authorities to release information instead of people just being able to openly find it.
Fair.
So throughout his questioning, he also said that he didn't know where she was from and that they had met on the streets. He said he was sorry, but it wasn't his fault. And after that article, I couldn't find any more about what happened or any other details.
That is heartbreaking that they never really found out who or why. So the next death is a man named J.L. Williams from Guthrie, Oklahoma. He shot himself in the head at the Savoy Hotel. He was between 33 and 40 years old. Different articles show different ages. And he was found around 5 p.m. when employees, again, forced the door open. Before it was forced to open, a chambermaid named Annie Girard had knocked several times and wasn't able to get in. And I think that one of the strangest things about this is that no one heard a gunshot.
Yeah.
Which you would think that you would hear it. Mm-hmm. So there was a .44 caliber revolver that was lying beneath him. He was staying in room 99 on the fifth floor, and he had checked in on January 31st. But again, the years weren't always included in these articles, so we don't know which year it was. So the article said that his room was just a few yards away from the room Mrs. Etta Marshall died in a month prior. So when he had checked in, he seemed nervous. He was pacing and like just being kind of weird before he got his key and went up to his room. The article that we read suggested that he had been having some money troubles. Another article said that he had been speculating extensively on the Board of Trade. And that means that he was purchasing assets, by the way. And he was doing that with the hope they would become more valuable in a short time, like stocks and bonds. Specifically, it sounded like he was involved in stocks, bonds, and greens.
I was wondering what that meant. I suspect like grain sales or something.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, why not? So it's suspected that he killed himself because he had suffered many losses financially. When they went through his belongings, they noticed that he had been borrowing money extensively from banks that were in his hometown. So perhaps he just didn't want to go back with having lost so much, especially not knowing how he would pay them back.
Yeah.
There were also several employees that killed themselves. However, some of them did not do so at the hotel.
But they were like employees at the time.
Yeah. John T. Ball was the former house detective at the Savoy Hotel. House detective. I love that for him. What a title.
What an interesting position to have.
Yeah. John shot himself in the head with a revolver at his estranged wife's home, which was about 4 minutes away from the hotel. Now, he had recently lost his job because he had been drinking excessively. The couple had been living separately, and he had gone home to tell her he was going to move to San Francisco for work and that he wanted her to go with him, which is very sad.
Yeah. So another employee, Edward Lee Yoakum, who was the captain of the bellboys at the Hotel Savoy, was found dead after also shooting himself. It happened about 10 minutes from the hotel. Also, weirdly, I was trying to figure out like where he lived. And when I was looking at Google Maps at that property, just to see how far it was, it seems like the house was recently, in the last couple of years, torn down. So it's like missing when you go down the street. But if you look at some of the pictures from a couple of years ago, it's there. But it's like, has like a fence around it.
Huh.
Jack Wall, a bellboy, killed himself at the hotel with a gun. Claude Knock Jr., who was only 16 years old, was killed by an elevator at the Savoy Hotel. He had been working part-time as an elevator operator for about 2 weeks. He had taken the elevator to the main floor, stepped out to talk to George Switzer, who was a bellboy, and unfortunately he didn't push the controlling level far enough, and the cage started to ascend.
It's heartbreaking.
He tried to climb back into the moving cage, and then that's when he got caught. He ended up slipping through the narrow space and fell to the bottom of the shaft. Horrific.
Yeah, yeah. That is very horrific.
Now, this next part I found, obviously, like, very sad, but, like, interesting. Because the person who got Claude Knock the elevator job got arrested shortly after. And his name's Leslie Dunsworth, and he was only 18. And he was actually the regular elevator operator for the Savoy Hotel. And police found a stolen license plate on his car and a .38 caliber revolver in his seat. He said that he had gotten the license plate and the gun to, quote, engage in a career of banditry, and that he gave over his job as the elevator boy to Knock. When Knock was killed, Dunsworth tried to just go back to his job, and then all of that happened where they found out what he was engaging in.
I also just find it so strange that in other generations and other times, people would talk about not great behavior in a strange way. Like, I was engaging in a career of banditry. Like, that's a very strange way. Last week, we talked about engaging in a career of, like, fornication and adultery.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just like, what?
Very colorful.
Why is that
words.
Your career?
Yeah.
Can't you just say I'm a bandit or I'm going to rob people? I don't know. That's neither here nor there. But we just needed, I needed a moment's reprieve from our death stories.
Yeah.
So next is Dr. E.R. Boulding, and he was found dead in his bed at the Savoy Hotel. He was originally from Wichita, Kansas, and unfortunately, it's suspected that he died of heart disease.
Woof. That's a lot of deaths, and I don't even think that was all of them.
That's a lot of deaths.
These are just the recorded ones.
Yeah, that people know about.
Yeah, people wrote about, but it seems like there could have been a lot more.
Yeah, I think so. Especially like more in modern times, I think people don't really always share when deaths occur.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at old photos and videos over the years and then at the new company that has, you know, photos on their website. And it looks like that during the renovation, they tried to keep the old charm that was salvageable, but it doesn't look exactly like the old video. So it's a little bit different now. So based on everything we talked to Amanda, do you think it is haunted and or would you stay there?
I think so. I mean, there's so much death, or at least like so much energy left over.
Yes.
And it's gone through so many changes. And even like before it was a hotel, there's a little bit of history of who lived on the land. So, I mean, it's gone through various changes, lots of sad things, a fire, just so much energy there. So I suspect something is there. Would I stay there? Like the thought of a museum, like an art museum and a hotel in one fascinates me. Like I think that that is a whole new way of like, staying at a hotel, being able to basically have like access to art 24/7 is really interesting to me.
I do like that.
I would like to stay there. I think that would be really neat. As far as, you know, like the history of it too, just not even just for the hauntings, but just that restaurant being so old and famous and all the stuff that's happened there. I think it would be an interesting place just to look at and visit sometime. What about you?
That's fair. I don't know if I want to stay there because it does sound like there is a lot of sadness energy there.
That's true.
But I would like to visit because it does sound interesting. And I like the premise of a hotel art gallery fusion, if you will. Yeah.
And if you do want to look at it too, for those listening, when you go to their website now, they have a little walkthrough of some of the gallery. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
So next week, we are going to be traveling to our spooky places and taking our Patreon along for the creeping.
I'm so fucking excited.
I know. All we've been doing, like,
it's all we do.
Texting each other, messaging. We're like, guys,
spooky time, spooky time.
I'm like, Lindsay, it's almost time. Lindsay, you want to do this? You want to do this? Let's do this. Let's get a tattoo. Let's do this. So lots happening. We're very excited. Now, if you want to come along with our creeping, we will be sharing as much as we can. As much as internet allows while we're there. And we're wanting our Patreon to join us for some of it. We're going to ask your opinion, ask what you think, give you some inside looks at some of the places we've talked about. Now, if you want to join us, there is still time to join our Patreon. If you do want to join our Patreon, head to our website, truecreeps.com, click on Patreon. And if you join any of our tiers, you'll be able to join in on the trip while we're there. We've been chatting with our Patreon recently about, you know, how to share the content while we're there too. So we've had a lot of discussions about this. Now, if you're not part of our Patreon, we will be sharing the trip details in a later episode with everyone else. But if you want the deets and the hot goss first, head over to our website. And yeah, we're very excited to share this trip with you guys.
I'm so hyped. I'm so hyped. This is also like Amanda and I's first trip, like going somewhere together in this way. That's like the two of us creeping around.
Yes, yes, just all spooky. Like, we have so much spooky stuff planned.
I love it. I love it so fucking much.
Very stoked. And with that, we're so excited to creep with you guys even more next week. So have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us. Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you. 2010s, several floors have been converted to long-term residential. By the early 1910s, several floors have been converted.
2010s.
What did I say? 1910s again?
19. Mm-hmm.
I am in a different century. In the early 19... I said it again! What's wrong with me? End of episode fodder for you. Okay. I've been going through my clothing
And it is one, humbling, and two, I'm just like, I want to get rid of all this, but I also don't want to just like throw it away, not throw it away, but like sometimes clothing that you donate does not get put out on the sales floor. So it makes me really, it makes me kind of pause to do that at first, because I'm like, I don't want them to just throw away like nice items of clothing. Mm-hmm. And then depending on where you're donating it, sometimes they're taking it, turning it around and immediately putting it on like eBay or what have you to sell it. And I'm like, that is not why I am doing this. So anyway, my point was just that I am under an avalanche of clothing at all times, and I am sad by it. End of story.
That's how the hotels end up like this, though. Yeah, like, this could be a storage room, and this could be a storage room.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the oldest continuously operating hotel in the United States, west of the Mississippi River.
Such a specific fact.
That's how I thought, too. And I was like, okay, like, I guess that's how you can divide everything.
I just find that fascinating. The reason why that sounds so peculiar to me is because the Mississippi is not in the center of the United States.
Right.
It's kind of like closer to the East Coast-ish. If you're going to divide the U.S. into three, it's like the first eastern third towards the center.
Yeah. So maybe the two-third. I don't know. The way it's said, I guess. It's just maybe because I'm so far west.
Yeah.
That I don't hear about the Mississippi River often.
I mean, I'm on the East Coast. And I don't hear about the Mississippi River often as well.
Maybe someone should put it back on the map.
Are we going to have to do a Mississippi River episode? Does that mean that we're going to have to get to go on one of those Mississippi River cruises that are like $18,000 where you live on the Mississippi River for like a month on a steamboat? Do you know about this?
I mean, if it has to be done.
My mom got like one of like the pamphlets for it. And I was like, this looks like a fucking treasure and a delight. I would love to do this.
I have not.
Too expensive. Mississippi River cruises. Do you want to sponsor True Creeps by giving us... two trips, because Amanda and I would both need trips. We would both love and enjoy it. Okay, goodbye.
A month's a long time, though.
I don't want a month-long trip. I just want a little baby trip.
Oh, okay.
Just
okay.
Enough to be able to come back and talk about True Creeps, about how amazing these river cruises are. But we won't know and can't talk about it unless you give us a free trip.
That is something that has not been discussed, is how haunted these cruises are. We'll have to investigate.
We will.
Every cruise.
Every, I don't know about every cruise. I saw, no, I don't know.
I keep seeing Antarctica things and I want to go.
Ooh.
It looks really cool.
Mm.
So now let's talk about why we're all here, right? We want to know about the hauntings inside this building.
Amanda, we are only here to talk about Frank's dreams.
And Frank's dreams. Sorry. You're right.
Frank's dreams, colon... The Thorn Hotel, parentheses, spooky travel again in Kansas City.
Wonderful. Love it.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's another Fall Out Boy song.
Is that perfect? We should really talk to Patrick Stump, right? Did you tell him about our names? We can help him.
Of course I did. Of course I did. I was so close that he was like, oh my gosh, who is that woman? She's captivating. Who has the world's honestly largest cup of like... just normal seltzer, and it's just having just a blast.
Well, we have what, a chat with him next week on what to name his songs.
Oh yeah, of course.
So back to hauntings.
I'm sorry. You know I love to like just stay on a joke, but look, by the time this episode comes out, maybe we will know him, because Topomancy was gonna put us on the map. I'm sorry. Please continue.
It's true. We're getting so many calls.
So many calls that I'm not answering.
Okay, so haunted.
It would also close you to gravity because it was a relatively heavy. What's the word heavy mean?
You tell, it's our second recording.